Hello and welcome to Football Never Sleeps, the pre-Blue Gold game edition. It's our off-season YouTube show that emphasizes Notre Dame football. In fact, it's all about Notre Dame football. We don't even pretend to do anything else during it. And we've got a big show for you tonight. Lots of stuff has happened in the last week as we're closing in on the end of spring practice. I want to remind you to subscribe to our channel and to hit the notification bell so you know when we have a new show, because we're not always on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. We move around to kind of fit with the news. And we also have a lot of other content going on. We've got a new recruiting writer, and he's also our new video guy. So we've got a lot more videos from practice and from interviews. And that's Charleston Bowles. But again, two good reasons to hit the subscription button and the notification bell. We'll get going here with our discussion in a minute, but I want to remind you to you can jump in with your questions, and Tyler will give you the tutorial real quickly here, since I don't know how to do it myself, but I know how to answer them. So off we go, Tyler.
Yeah, if you are on a desktop version of some sort, the comment box should be to the right of our talking heads. If you're on a mobile device, an app, there should be a chat box comment section below our talking voices. So hopefully you can figure that out. I have confidence that Eric could figure it out if he was forced to do so. But fortunately, he gets direct access to me. He doesn't have to submit questions through a queue to get my answers. So Eric, what do you want to begin? Where do you want to begin with our discussion of what we'll be seeing this week, this weekend on Saturday in the Blue Gold game?
Well, I think we're going to talk about Blue Gold expectations, and let's start with the game format. Now, Notre Dame hasn't officially rolled this out, but we've been able to paste together the clues. We're expecting a conventional scoring game, and you know that many times in the past there's been that kind of advanced Stableford golf system for football where you get points for first downs and so forth. We think it's going to be conventional scoring. We know that there's a player draft tomorrow morning at 9:15. Notre Dame is going to kind of tweet out the picks on their Twitter site. I think it's also going to be on their YouTube channel and their Facebook. Actually, the media was invited last year. We were not invited this year to the draft, but it was pretty fun. And so they'll split up the teams. It won't be offense versus defense. Typically, there's a running clock in the second half. There's usually some restrictions on special teams, like no returns. And if you want to watch it and you don't want to drive to South Bend, you can pay Peacock to watch it streaming live. You can also watch it on Fighting Irish TV after the game on replays. And then I'll be doing radio. If you want to listen to the radio, Darren Pritchett and I are going to be doing a pregame show at 1:30. I'll be doing the color commentary for the game at 2. And then here's where you can find that. You can go to Sirius XM channel 380, or you can go to the Sirius Internet channel, which is 970. If you listen to the, you're listening on your phone or listening on your home computer. Locally, it's Sports Radio 960. There, you can also stream it through the WSBTRadio.com site, WSBTRadio.com, and then they have a free WSBT radio app. So there's a whole bunch of different ways to listen to it. So that's where I'll start. Tyler, do you want to chime in with anything about the Blue Gold game format?
I'm actually going to give you a prop bet. What will there be more of? More ways to listen to you on the radio, or touchdown scored in the Blue Gold game?
I would say, let's see, there's one. I'd say more touchdowns. I think,
Though last year was 13-10.
You know, I forgot about that, but I think
you're lucky if you forgot about it.
I think there will be more ways. I just think we're going to see a vanilla enough defense that we're going to see some fun offensive plays. And there's so many good wide receivers. You know, I mean, there were about three healthy wide receivers last year for the Blue Gold game. I mean,
and Drew Pine was playing quarterback for both teams.
Exactly. So I think, you know, we've got a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of wide receivers, not so many running backs. So I think we'll see more touchdowns than ways to listen. I should remind everybody that this is the legacy weekend. So we had Hunter Bivin on our podcast last week, and he's in charge of bringing back the former Notre Dame football players. Last year, they had 300 show up. They're expecting 400 this weekend. So that should be a really fun part of the weekend. Also, scads of recruits. I mean, our visitors list on the Insider Lounge is really getting lengthy. It's almost going to be able to take up a thread of its own just for April 22nd. And we'll talk about the recruits a little bit later in the show. What we'll move to now is what we hope to learn from the Blue Gold game, which one thing to keep in mind is it is difficult to draw conclusions from the game, the way it's formatted.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes we can see some things here or there that are promising, or maybe some foreshadowing. Sometimes it's fool's gold, maybe probably fool's gold more often than not. Or it could be a harbinger of bad things to come. I think Phil Dracovic's story, like the final chapter in Phil Dracovic's Notre Dame career, is basically his poor performance in the Blue Gold game, and just like the way his confidence really sank after that, and didn't sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel for himself anymore. So we'll see what this version of the Blue Gold game spits out at us. I don't know that there were many huge takeaways. I mean, one of the big takeaways last year was Jadarian Price, and like, okay, this guy is legit. And then unfortunately he got injured, and so we didn't get to see that last season, but I think that's something that's still fresh in our minds. Whenever he does get back, he intends to be 100% this summer and able to play in the fall. But
Jaden Thomas flashed in the game too, and that was the first time we had really convincingly seen that, and he ended up being a pretty good receiver last year.
Yep, yeah, that's a good one. So yeah, it's things here or there. I mean, I think folks saw Steve Angeli lead like a game-winning drive at the end of the game, and then everyone kept thinking about that when they're demanding to see him last season, and I don't know that that was ever something that was even close to on the minds of Tommy Rees last season. So I think sometimes the lasting image from a player could maybe influence the fan base more than it probably should. But you only get so many opportunities to see them, so I understand how that can happen. I mean, I think it happens to us just off the limited practice viewings that we get. And I mean, just to talk about, like, for instance, Chris Tyree, we saw him have a practice where he frankly didn't look very good playing slot receiver. You're like, man, is this really going to work? But everything we've heard since then is he's looked great, and they're confident in him. He potentially is starting slot receiver for Notre Dame. They're moving guys around because they have confidence in what they have in the wide receiver position. So it's just something you have to sort of be cognizant of, but just enjoy it. It's football. Last chance we get to see some football until we get to late July or August for us with whenever Notre Dame gets its camp started to gear up for Dublin, Ireland.
Well, the four things that I put down were how much better the wide receivers and corners are, and they'll be going against each other. You know, there's more of them. I think there's better quality of them. I think this game will bring that out. I think there will be some good individual plays there. I'm hoping to see better quarterback wide receiver chemistry than we saw in practices number 6 and 9. Those were the two that we were allowed to view the whole practice. And in those both, again, the defense was really able to scheme up the offense. They were able to blitz all the time. And I think we'll see a more vanilla defense. So maybe we'll see the chemistry a little bit better that the coaches have been talking about. Tackling fundamentals. you know, even if you're playing a vanilla defense, you should be able to tackle people. And then maybe some individual defensive linemen and linebackers that we want to look at. You know, we're not quite sure if Prince Colley, which is everybody's favorite linebacker that doesn't play enough. Wait a minute.
We know that Jalen Snead is your favorite linebacker that doesn't play enough.
Jalen Snead is my favorite linebacker that doesn't play enough. But I'm talking about the majority of the people. Everybody probably thinks that's just my weird eccentricity. But I do think he's going to be a really good linebacker. So some of those guys, Jack Kaiser is a guy that I'm really curious to see. And we won't see him in everything that we've seen him this spring. He's been in a lot of the packages. We've also seen him play a little bit inside, and he's looked good. I'm curious if they'll put him at Rover for this game or if they'll play him inside a little bit more. He's a guy that's worth watching for me. So,
yeah, well, I actually saw him after practice today, and he wasn't dressed, and it looked like maybe he's dealing with a foot or an ankle injury. So I don't have any clarity on what that is, the severity of it. He didn't have like a cast on or anything like that, or a boot on his foot. But I did notice that he was not in pads. So I told the Insider Lounge that this morning. So that's a benefit of
being. I should have been in the Insider Lounge to follow that. And so I was just testing you, and I'm glad that you brought it up. go ahead. You can jump in there, and then at the end, I'm going to tell my favorite horror story from the Blue Gold game.
Okay. You hit a lot of the things that I hope to learn from the Blue Gold game. I want to see the wide receivers make plays. I mean, we've heard that this is something that is happening in practices, and we quite frankly haven't seen a lot of it in the windows of practice that we were able to see. So to get a chance to see them making those connections with the quarterbacks, I think that's just something that we should be able to learn. Will the defense stop blitzing? I imagine that will be the case, and it'll create some more opportunities for the offense to have some success. And then sort of to go along with that, can the defensive line generate pass rush on its own? Because of the windows that we saw had so much blitzing in it, we didn't really get a chance to see. It's like, okay, how well is the defensive line doing in terms of generating pass rush when it's just rushing four? So I think those are things that I hope we get a chance to learn a little bit more about on Saturday, with the caveat of obviously sometimes it could be a bit of a mirage.
Okay. What are some things we probably won't learn that people will want, you know, kind of go there hoping that they're going to learn?
I would say how good are Notre Dame safeties, because there aren't going to be enough of them to field a two healthy rosters full of scholarship players. There's basically three that are healthy right now that are playing, and so one guy's gonna be working with a walk-on, and I don't know how much the other two will be working with each other the whole time. I'm not sure what they'll do. Maybe
they should go early in the draft since there's so few of them.
Yeah, maybe they'll rotate. Maybe the safeties will be on both teams. Maybe that's the best way to go about it with such a light depth chart there, but due to injuries. So I think that's something that we certainly won't learn a lot about just because of the numbers. I don't know that we're going to get clear answers on who the starting guards will be. I know that's one of the biggest questions about Notre Dame's offense going into next season, because those are two very important position battles happening. But I don't
know. It'll be interesting to see where they get drafted, though, the guards.
Sure. Yeah, I think that tells you a little bit about the reputation that those guys have built throughout the spring. How different will Notre Dame's offense be this season? I don't know that Jared Parker is going to spoil anything that he has up his sleeve in the Blue Gold game. I think some downfield passes certainly make sense, but that doesn't necessarily, you don't have to do a lot of trickeration to make just tell guys to go deep and have someone actually throw it there. So I don't know that there'll be anything too crazy on that front. And then also on the flip side, what wrinkles Al Golden has in store for the defense this year, and also sort of what wrinkles is he getting rid of? Because he's made it pretty clear that last year he sort of felt that they were preparing for too many different things, and he needed to have a better focus on, okay, let's just prepare for things that we're actually going to use. what does that mean? What does that look like? We've seen some blitz packages and some nickel and dime looks from the defense. I would imagine that those will be lasting parts of the defensive game plan moving forward, given the state of college football and the passing games that Notre Dame will play against. But I don't know that we're going to learn a ton more about that this coming Saturday. What do you think, Eric?
I had a lot of the same things you had. The one thing that I'll add is who the starting quarterback is.
Sure.
I don't think Marcus is going to get up there afterwards. Marcus Freeman is going to get up at the podium afterward and say, oh, our starting quarterback is so-and-so. I think that's going to happen in early August, because he's not going to do it during the summer. If he doesn't do it tomorrow, then we're looking at August, and he may have a pretty good idea once they get to August who it is. I initially was advocating, and I think I did on this show, mm-hmm. that they should name it before, but Tyler Buchner has played well enough that he deserves going into the summer to still be playing for that this summer. I think the downside is if he doesn't get it, then he's stuck if he wanted to go somewhere else. Right. The transfer portal window will close on April 30th. And I still think eventually we're going to end up with Sam Hartman as the quarterback. What we probably won't also see or learn, thank God, is my youngest son at the game. My horror story with the Blue Gold game is, I think it was Bob Davies' first year. So my son would have been, Blake would have been six at the time. And I was the Notre Dame basketball beat writer at the time. And I kind of got thrown into the coverage at the last minute. And I said, hey, I don't have somebody to watch my son. Can I bring him with me? And they're like, yeah, sure, go ahead. So we sat outside. I thought him being in the press box would be too disruptive. And then afterwards, we went down to talk to Bob Davey, who was the head coach, and some of the players, and we're sitting in the press conference. And Bob Davey comes up and sees my son, and he says, hi, my name is Bob Davey. I'm the head coach of Notre Dame. And he goes, hi, my name's Blake Hansen, and this is my dad. And Bob goes, well, I know your dad. And then my son looks at me and he goes, I'm bored. So that didn't make a great impression. So I have not brought him to a Blue Gold game since.
He wanted a more rousing introduction from Bob Davey, clearly.
I think he was bored for the whole day, and it just spilled over at that moment, because they did have the Stableford system, and he was just learning to play football. And so he didn't understand why they were getting points for first downs and why they were getting points for, tackles for losses. He was completely confused by that. And I was trying to explain to him it was supposed to make the game more fun for the people sitting out in the stands, and he didn't see it that way.
Yeah.
And frankly, I hate it. I don't like the Stableford system. I understand why they do it. A lot of times they're short on personnel groups. I love it being an actual game, even if it's mitigated by some rules and, Drew Pine having to play both sides last year. I just think it's more fun when it's a regular game.
Yeah, and I really do like the addition of the Blue Gold draft. I think It's just an interesting wrinkle, makes it a little bit more, maybe a little bit more competitive, because you're sort of,
right.
Maybe some feelings are hurt. Maybe some guys are talking a little bit more smack, because there's like a more of a, like a team pride thing that's going on here between the blue and gold teams. So I think it's an interesting angle to it. I'm interested to see what those rosters look like when the drafts come out. I don't know that Notre Dame had said anything, but in the recent promo video that they released on Twitter, and I'm sure it's other places, but I saw it on Twitter. It looks like Dylan McCullough and Al Washington will be the head coaches of the respective teams again. I think it was Kyle
Dylan
Hamilton.
Dylan McCullough being a coach is ups the trash talk ante.
Kyle Hamilton and Cole Kmet were featured in the Notre Dame video. And I think Cole Kmet was saying he's team blue and Kyle Hamilton was pulling for team gold. So we'll see how those rosters end up shaping up Thursday morning. All right, let's get to a question we have here from Frank Sarah, and then also remind folks that if they'd like to submit questions, please do so. We will fit them in throughout the show as we have time. And this first one we have is from Frank Sarah. As I said, should ND take two safeties in the portal? When do you think we will see movement towards ND? Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
Especially if they get to the end of the week and they think this Lorenzo Styles thing at corner is going to be permanent, then I think you could think about moving one of the corners to safety and then taking somebody in the portal. I definitely think you need a portal caliber player, because I think you need somebody in that first to make that a four-man rotation. And I think if Ben Minnick and even Adon Schuler can give you some quality downs here or there, I think that's a bonus. And you're certainly trying to develop those guys for the future. The thing about like moving Clarence Lewis there, though, is he's near the end of his college career, and you're almost looking for a younger player to move to safety so that you can develop them over time, because right, the safety room could be pretty empty after this season, just depending on what Xavier Watts and Ramon Henderson want to do with their eligibility. And I realize people are saying, what about Thomas Harper? I don't think they're counting on him playing a lot of conventional safety. I think he's more of a nickel. I think he could certainly fill in at that position and do well. But I think two bodies make sense. But I think they could probably get away with just one in the portal if Styles is a corner. It's too bad Styles is in a safety. That would be perfect because he's got some eligibility left.
No, that they got the wrong Styles for that. Sonny's the safety.
Right. His younger brother, who's like twice as big as him. I think, isn't he close to 6'5"?
I'm not certain, to be honest.
He's pretty tall.
He's big. I didn't know he's big.
Yeah.
He's bigger than Lorenzo for sure.
He's bigger than both Lorenzos, the dad and the son.
Yeah, maybe combined. No. I think I don't know that they would take two safeties. Certainly one seems to make sense. But again, I mean, I don't think you want to take one just to take one. You got to bring in one that you feel like can find a role, challenge those top three guys for playing time. And it would be nice if you can bring a guy with multiple years of eligibility, but I don't know. Sometimes I think that's always the goal in the portal, and we haven't really seen that work out with a high frequency. So you can't certainly anticipate or count on that. I think that the Lorenzo Styles point is a good one, because that definitely changes how many cornerbacks you feel like you need. If Lorenzo is someone that you think can contribute, which I mean, I think there's a chance that could happen. I mean, he was a pretty good high school cornerback. Mike Mickens has been someone who has developed cornerbacks quickly as freshmen, like in college. So you think, like, shouldn't there be some sort of correlation between transitioning a wide receiver to cornerback from transitioning someone like Benjamin Morrison to a June-enrolled freshman to becoming a freshman All-American? So I'm curious to see what that looks like. It seems more like self-motivated than based on like Notre Dame's need. And he seems to be very interested in doing this and giving it a shot. I like his attitude about it. So, then you look at, so was it Clarence Lewis that's better at safety? Is it Ryan Barnes? Ryan Barnes is the one that at least Notre Dame has acknowledged to us that has done some cross training at safety.
Right. I talked to Clarence Lewis. He said he has not done any, but he's been the nickel almost the whole spring.
Right. And then I guess what it comes down to then is if you're in a position where you need Thomas Harper to play safety, do you feel more comfortable with playing Thomas Harper at safety and playing Clarence Lewis at nickel? Or do you feel more comfortable playing Clarence Lewis at safety and playing Thomas Harper at nickel? I don't really know how you feel about that. If you think Thomas Harper's best position is nickel, then maybe you're getting two worse versions of players if you play him at safety and bring in another nickel back that isn't as good as him. So it's going to be an interesting thing. I mean, for Notre Dame's sake, they probably hope they don't have to worry about it and just everyone stays healthy, which hasn't been the case. Right. And they can just sort of get through the season with the guys that they have and not have to worry about moving guys around. But I think that's hard to count on, especially in college football.
Okay, so we're going to go next to the wide receiver shuffle because that's kind of the most recent thing on our minds. We talked to Chancey Stuckey and some of the wide receivers today. We were supposed to talk to Deion Colsey as well. He had an illness, so he wasn't at practice, so he got to miss his media opportunity. But lots going on with the wide receivers. I think it's a pretty interesting position group. We just mentioned the Lorenzo-style cornerback experiment. We're going to go into maybe a little bit more detail there when we talk about the cornerbacks. We should mention that Caleb Smith, the elder Caleb Smith, the Virginia Tech grad transfer who would have been a sixth-year player, he medically retired this past weekend. Ironically, the other Caleb Smith was on campus. He's the wide receiver that will join the group, a freshman from Frisco, Texas. He'll join the group in June. And then Tyler talked to Tobias Merriweather among the interview opportunities today. I spent some time with both Chris Tyree and Chancey Stuckey, and I wrote a story about the three freshman wide receivers that are here now. They're early enrollees, Rico Flores Jr. and Braylon James and Jaden Greathouse. And one of the reasons why there's no panic in Caleb Smith retiring and why, you know, Chancey Stuckey isn't crying that Lorenzo Styles is thinking about being a cornerback is because of those three. They have been every bit as good at advertised, if not better, Chancey was telling me today.
Yeah, you teed up Chancey to say, hey, give me a little bit of information on all three of those guys. And he hit a home run in terms of how he answered it. That was probably the best answer of the question and answer segment, at least while I was standing there. I always find it funny when we all have our own different questions that we want to ask. And then like someone asks, obviously only one person can ask a single question about a single thing. And then everyone starts tweeting about what you said about the freshman. It's like, well, aren't you guys glad Eric asked that? Because all your questions didn't give us as good of answers as that. So that was really well done by Chancey Stuckey. And obviously he feels very strongly about those guys as players. And he even said, he's like, we know that we hit on these three receivers, and to have that confidence already. Now, maybe that's a little bit biased considering he's the one that recruited them, but
he gave credit to other people for recruiting them.
Sure. Yeah. He wasn't doing it by himself. But they feel really confident that they hit on those guys. It still sounds like Rico Flores Jr. and Jaden Greathouse are probably the most physically ready to contribute this season, whereas Braylon James is more maybe a bit of a long-term project, but his ceiling could maybe even be higher than both of those guys. So a really illuminating answer from Chancey Stuckey there. But yeah, I think the sort of rise of those guys and the understanding of what those guys are makes Notre Dame comfortable with letting Lorenzo Styles try some cornerback. Maybe they don't look to the portal this spring and summer to replace someone like Caleb Smith. I still think it wouldn't be a bad idea, but I think they can afford to be picky rather than like be desperate that we need a wide receiver at this point. So I think that will likely play a role into what Notre Dame decides to do there. Unfortunate news for Caleb Smith that he's dealing with some things. He asked for some privacy and said he needs to deal with his mental and physical health. It's tough when any kid has to medically retire from football. But given his circumstances, he like grad transferred. He was probably really excited about what he thought could become of things for him at Notre Dame, and to see that sort of come to an end a few months into that sort of experiment and decision, that was unfortunate. So we hadn't seen a ton of him making plays in the spring. That was a bit surprising. I think I anticipated to see him more making some plays with the ones, having some good chemistry with Sam Hartman. But some of the practices that we saw, he was working more along with the freshmen than he was working with the guys that have sort of solidified themselves as number one offense kind of guys.
The other thing that's helped with feeling good about, again, the little bit of attrition of two of the most experienced receivers, it is that the other guys on the team have also surged. You've also had a lot of improvement from Jaden Thomas, particularly Tobias Merriweather. He's been the talk of the spring. Deion Colsey, and then Chris Tyree shifting over. Tyler mentioned early when we saw him, there were some drops and maybe some growing pains, and apparently those have really been reduced. That, you know, Chancey Stuckey said today that Chris Tyree was miles ahead of where they expected him to be, which is amazing considering, again, where he was in practice number six, that in the last seven practices, and they've had a lot of them jammed in a small period of time, that he's made a lot of progress. Now, Tyler, you had a chance to speak with Tobias Merriweather. What was maybe a couple of takeaways that you'd like to share from that?
Yeah, and I have a story that I just haven't been able to file into our system to get it out there to be published, so it'll be filed by the time.
So this will be a teaser.
This will be a little bit of tease, and my apologies for not getting that out sooner. But, yeah, he was enlightening, particularly with some of the details from his concussion that he suffered last season. He missed three games after the Clemson game. So that would, starting with the Navy game, which he did still travel to the Navy game, but didn't play, but was dealing with concussion symptoms. And he said he was basically on bed rest for a week and a half. So it was a bit scary. I think there was some concerns with the symptoms that he was being affected by, and it really sort of put him on his butt quite literally. So good thing that he's able to recover. He feels fine now, but obviously sort of informs why Notre Dame was so careful with him at the end of last season, which it was just sort of unfortunate timing for him. He had that breakout catch against Stanford. He finally felt like he started to sort of get his role in the offense, understand what was being asked of him. And then that momentum was sort of lost by the concussion, which actually happened in a practice. So, but he's really sort of, he said that like being silent, it sort of made him hungrier for the season. Like he came into the spring ready to prove that he deserved to be a starter, and he can be that, and he can make plays. And he's not just a guy that can go run a post and it's hard to cover. He's a guy that can run comebacks. He can do short routes. He can run option routes. He can be a reliable chain mover rather than just a big play threat. And that will allow him to see more playing time. And I think that allows Notre Dame to potentially have maybe a shorter bench, where they're not necessarily feeling like they have to rotate guys in and out for specific roles, where they can keep guys out there and have them do multiple different things. Where certainly you'd like to get different guys in there to keep them fresh, but you don't have to take Tobias Merriweather out of the game if you get into the red zone, because there's not as much ground for him to cover. I think he feels confident that he can do those things. Chancey Stuckey spoke really highly of him. He said, "I don't like doing comparisons," and then he compared him to Randy Moss and specifically to Randy Moss in sort of the way that he separates from guys when the ball is in the air. And he feels like that is a very special trait that Tobias Merriweather has. And sounds pretty appealing if you put him in the same sentence with Randy Moss. I don't think Chancey Stuckey necessarily intended for him to have that sort of expectations, but even at one point he's like, we expect him to be an extremely good wide receiver. So I think that Notre Dame, the expectations internally for Tobias Merriweather are really high. And I'm sure that everyone that wanted to see Tobias Merriweather play last season might take that with a grain of salt. It's like, well, why didn't you play him more last year? But the thought is that he could be a real impact player for Notre Dame this season. He seems to have a better grasp of the offense. Is confident in his game, and we'll see where he's at with being on the same page with Sam Hartman and Tyler Buckner, but it sounds like he's in a pretty good position right now.
So before we move on to cornerbacks, I'll remind you, you can make comments like Pat is about Randy Moss and national championship aspirations. And you can also ask questions in the question portal. And we'll work those in as we go through the different aspects of our chat with you tonight. So cornerbacks, we had Mike Mickens and a whole bunch of cornerbacks came up for interviews on Tuesday. So let's go maybe more into detail of the Lorenzo Styles experiment, because Tyler, you had a chance to interview him. We didn't realize he was going to be coming. Tyler right. was able to jump on that and wrote a really good feature on that. So what did you take away from your talk with Lorenzo?
Yeah, that he was very interested in this. He feels like it should be a quick transition for him. He said like Tuesday's practice, which was his first full practice at cornerback, he said it sort of felt like riding a bike. He feels like covering guys in man-to-man coverage, he is confident in his ability to do that. He has the skill set to be able to do that. I'm sure there's some rust there, but he likes the challenge of doing that. He's embraced it. He was a proponent of this move, and he comes from a defensive family. Is like we mentioned earlier, Sonny Styles, his younger brother, is a safety at Ohio State. His father, also Lorenzo, was a linebacker at Ohio State and in the NFL. He played a lot of defense growing up. He was always a two-way player. He said, listen, I chose to play wide receiver in college because I wanted to catch touchdowns, but I feel like I can potentially score touchdowns for the defense now too. So he admitted, he's like, I don't really know the defense. Like, I don't know. He's still learning all the nuances to that. And so I think what the position he will be put in Saturday's Blue Gold game, where I think Marcus Freeman indicated that he probably would play both ways. We'll see how that plays out come Saturday. But I think when he's in on defense, he'll be given like very specific, probably basic assignments, because I don't know they're expecting him to know all the different zone combinations that Notre Dame's defense could have. But again, in a game like the Blue Gold game, I don't know that Notre Dame's putting a lot of its complicated defensive schemes out there anyway. So might not be that big of a deal, but to get him out there competitive, he seems to really like the opportunity. Mike Mickens was pretty confident in terms of where Lorenzo Styles can go. I think everyone's sort of being a little bit careful about, okay, how long of a experiment will this be? But it seems like Lorenzo's sort of full speed ahead. I think he's even open to the idea, hey, play me both ways. I don't care. Like, I'll still play some wide receiver if you need me to. He just wants to sort of have an impact on the game, and he feels like he can potentially do that at cornerback.
So as we look at the cornerback group and the depth of it, and we're not counting Thomas Harper or the Nichols, we're not counting them as cornerbacks other than Clarence Lewis, who's played a lot of cornerback. You only have two guys that are senior eligibility. Only Cam Hart is, he actually would have another year after this year if he wanted his COVID year. Same with Clarence Lewis. Cam Hart's going to be in next year's draft. Clarence Lewis could come back. Lorenzo would be in the junior class in terms of eligibility. And then everybody else is sophomore or freshman eligibility. And there's six of those guys. There's Barnes. There's Jaden Mickey. Ben Morrison, Chance Tucker, those guys are all sophomore eligibility. Some of them are juniors academically, but those are the sophomore eligibility. And then you have Christian Gray, who's unfortunately not going to play in the game Saturday because he recently had to have his knee scoped, minor knee injury. And then Micah Bell is a track star who's going to be here in June. Micah just ran. I've been tracking the track times for some of the guys that are arriving in June. Micah just ran a 10-4-1 100 meter dash in a meet down in Texas, I believe last weekend, for Kincaid High School and K Kincaid School in Houston. And so, I mean, you've got a lot of talent, a lot of depth at that position all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's Mike Mickens has plenty of talent at his disposal. Certainly proved what he can do in terms of coaching them up with Benjamin Morrison last season. And I thought Notre Dame sort of got by with what it had last season, even if Cam Hart didn't play to maybe his potential as he dealt with the shoulder injury. And I thought Tariq Bracey had a heck of a year last year. So I'm curious to see what these guys that are sort of chomping at the bit there to make more of an impact, what their roles can be. What does Cam Hart look like this season? Because if Cam Hart plays to his potential, he could be the best cornerback on the roster. I don't know that that's realistic with what we've seen from Benjamin Morrison, but I think going into last season, we certainly thought that was the case. And he was very confident when speaking to you about where he thinks he can be in the NFL draft next year. So I think that's a real like potential X factor. It's kind of weird to sort of call him that because he has played so much throughout his career, but I don't know that you can necessarily count on what he's going to be because of his history of health issues. But if he can get back to where he was at playing at two seasons ago, I think that would be a real positive for Notre Dame.
So Cam is Cam's best friend is Kyle Hamilton, who's the Baltimore Ravens rookie. Kyle is back in school this semester trying to work towards his degree. Cam and Kyle are roommates again, so I'm sure Cam is listening to Kyle and has those kind of aspirations. Cam also lives in Baltimore, so he's around the Ravens a lot. He can root for him when he's back home. Yeah. You know, he's a 6'3 kid who can run. He's got length. And if he's fully healthy and teams can get beyond his injury history, you know, he's got a chance to do something in the draft. Cam feels like he's a first-round draft pick and feels like people are sleeping on him, and he's wants to prove that this fall. He's happy for people to wait to stop doubting him once he shows it on the field, and so we'll see. But he has had three serious shoulder injuries, two to his left, one to his right. He is just getting over the latest labrum surgery to his left shoulder. And so he said, he told me he was going to be 100% in a couple weeks. So that obviously he's not going to be able to play in the blue gold game, but once they start doing workouts for the summer, he should be 100%.
Yeah. And I saw on the Notre Dame Instagram account after practice the other day, when we get to talk to a position group, they'll have that position group featured on Instagram, and they'll ask like fans to submit questions, and someone asked, who was the fastest cornerback? And Cam Hart was insisting that he's beaten a lot of those guys in races. Now, obviously, Micah Bell isn't here yet. Micah Bell would probably like a word about that when he gets here. But Cam Hart was saying that he's beaten those guys in races before. So I don't know if he's stretching the truth there, but he does have that speed, even if that might not be the first thing you think of when you think of Cam Hart.
Cam was also a guy that came to Notre Dame as a wide receiver. He was only a wide receiver for his freshman fall, and then they flipped him over to defense. And he, you know, just point of interest, is really excited about Lorenzo Styles and his chance to be. He felt like the biggest adjustment was going to be the mental flip over to defense, not anything physical. He said that Lorenzo is a dog, which means he's a good athlete and determined and all the other positive things for people that are in my age group. So,
all right. You want to talk a little bit about the offensive line?
Yeah, let's go with the offensive line. We had three of the offensive linemen, not any of the contenders for offensive guard, but the three starters, the three established starters.
Yeah, that was a very Harry Hiestand-like move from Joe Rudolph, it seemed.
It was. He's kept the continuity of Harry Hiestand in just about every way, other than the decibel level is a little bit lower. He's intense, but just not intense to the point that that you need to cover Marcus Freeman's kids' ears when they come to practice. But So there was Joe Alt, and you had Blake Fisher, the two tackles, and you had Zeke Correll. And then Joe Rudolph, I thought was really interesting. The new offensive line coach had a lot to say. So let's start with Joe Rudolph. What were some of the things that you learned about the offensive guard races at left and right guard?
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting maybe a shorter list of names. He was naming everyone, and I think it speaks to his, at least what he's expressed, that he'd like to get the best five out there. So he's not going to discount Tosh Baker, even though it seems like it would be a challenge to have a 6'8" guard. But they're willing to sort of entertain that if he can play with the pad level that he needs to and the knee bend to get underneath guys on the interior of the defensive line. I think he even threw Emil Wagner's name out there, which that was probably the most shocking to me. I was like, man, I don't know that I had seen that from Emil Wagner in practices, but I don't know that I've had an intense focus on Emil Wagner either. He just still looks pretty skinny in my opinion, and probably has some growing to do still there. But yeah, I mean, the other guards, the one person that he didn't really talk about at all, and I think is probably related to Michael Carmody dealing with some injuries, was that he didn't bring up Carmody's name. No one asked him about him, so it's not like he was asked about him and then just didn't answer the question. It was just his name didn't come up when he was talking about Billy Shrouth and Rocco Spindler and Andrew Kristofic and Pat Coogan. He described Rocco Spindler as having really turned it on towards the end of the spring here. And he said he felt like, we spoke to them at the end of last week, that going into Saturday's scrimmage and this week was sort of going to be a real, really telling about how this guard situation was going to play out. I think he was looking forward to these being sort of very significant tests for those guys that are in those competitions. If I were putting odds on things, I would still go with Andrew Kristofic and Billy Shrouth as the guys that are the favorites at the right guard and left guard spots. I talked to Blake Fisher a little bit about Andrew Kristofic, and he talked about how he liked playing alongside him. They seem to have a rapport there. But Pat Coogan is making a case as someone that started the spring as the number two center, but they're giving a chance to get into the guard mix, which then opened up some opportunities for Ashton Craig as the number two center behind Zeke Correll. I think I've discussed all of them. Billy Shrouth, I think.
Yeah.
He seemed like one of the interesting talking points with Joe Rudolph was sort of all this blitzing that we've seen. And Zeke Correll made a comment that it seems like the defense is blitzing on every play. And so there's been a lot thrown at the defense or the offensive line. And Joe Rudolph didn't say he didn't like it, but I think he said, like, for some guys, it would be helpful to sort of be able to sort of ease them into things and teach them the fundamentals before you're teaching them the fourth hardest thing that they would do, or like the exception to the rules. The exceptions to the rules. And it seemed like Billy Shrouth specifically would be one guy that maybe would have benefited to not have to do, to sort of be keeping his head above water and just sort of get more confidence within himself because that's the downside of all this blitzing that I had felt. And I was worried about sort of the toll that it would be taking on the offense of, if they're having such bad practices, how do they sort of get confidence in what they're doing? And sort of get back on track. I think in the end, Billy Shrouth will probably be better for it, but it maybe makes this part of the growth process a little bit more frustrating and challenging, but could be rewarding in the end.
One thing we should mention is Caleb Johnson, a tackle, entered the transfer portal today. That is not anything new. Right. It was announced at the very beginning of spring practice. He was no longer with the team, so it was just a matter of time before he went through the formality of getting into the portal, which opened on April 15th. And then did you want to mention anything about your Blake Fisher interview?
Yeah, I just talked a little bit to him about a number of things. What he did trim down a little bit from last season. He felt like feels a little bit more mobile, a little agile, and I think that's something that Joe Rudolph wants to take advantage of in terms of getting his offensive tackles out on the edge and stretching the field horizontally a little bit in order to create some more running lanes vertically as well. So I think that's an interesting wrinkle. He sort of talked about the transition and sort of how Joe Rudolph may be teaching things in different ways than Harry Hiestand, but the ideas and the concepts are sort of the same, and they're all to get to the same level. But Blake Fisher seems really confident. He feels like he can be even more dominant. Even though he's lost some weight, he feels like he's gotten stronger. He sort of cut out some of the bad eating that he had as part of his weekly diet, and sort of contained that to letting himself loose a little bit on the weekends in terms of what he can eat, but trying to keep things clean during the week and getting him in a good spot to be able to stay where he's at. He said right now it feels like it might be harder for him to put on weight than to lose weight, just because of how good of a spot he feels like he's put himself in, and sort of in terms of eating healthy and obviously the amount of work he's putting in to on the field to get better. You spoke to Joe Alt. What were your biggest takeaways from that conversation?
Well, I wondered, obviously he's, to me, it's obvious that he's the best player on the team this year, and wondered how does the guy that's all American and maybe a top, a first round draft choice, if he wants to become a junior in the draft next year, how does that guy get better? What's his process and so forth? It's pretty interesting. There's a lot that's changed around Joe, and Joe hasn't changed. He's still the inside the three-star guy that was kind of overlooked, that works his butt off. Not with a chip on his shoulder necessarily either. Just that's kind of his process of who he is, mm-hmm. And now he's a 6'8", 320-pound left tackle that is amazing. But again, he talks about, all the film work, that extra film work he does. He talks about trying to take now the younger guys along with him. He's very into getting food-related NIL deals for the offensive line, more so than worrying about his own individual stuff. So he was listing off the different places, Mimo's Pizza and Mission Barbecue, and they're working on one with Portillo's, which makes me jealous. There should be one with a Notre Dame media and Portillo's. And he said, well, we need to feed these guys. And so just an interesting guy in terms of how he goes about his business and how he gets better. I think one thing that I'll mention is, it's been, since the 90s, I think it's 97. I've got it somewhere, but I don't have it handy. When the NFL opened their door to underclassmen, and there have been a bunch of Notre Dame true juniors that have gone through. None of them have been offensive linemen. Now, there's been people giving up fifth years like Quentin Nelson, and mm-hmm. But I mean, even a guy like Zach Martin played 5 years. Ronnie right. Stanley gave up his fifth year. Mike McGlinchey didn't. So nobody's gone out after 3 years, and you're going to have two guys, especially Joe Alt, very tempted at the end of this year. But I think Notre Dame's got some good tackles coming up behind them. You mentioned Emil Wagner, who was, considered getting in the guard, and then Tosh Baker. So, and we think, some of even the younger ones like Charles Jagaza, eventually is going to be, somebody that follows that lineage of all the high picks of the left tackles. Really interesting offensive line conversation. I think they'll be pretty good this year. The sooner that they kind of figure out who the starting guards are, then they can work a little bit more on chemistry.
Yeah, even though Joe Rudolph was giving a lot of names about the guards, he did seem to feel like he would like to have a pretty good idea of what it will look like going into the fall in the next couple of weeks here. So certainly he's not going to rule out anyone being able to make a push into camp, but I think he'll have at least a good idea in his head of that pecking order that he'll prefer or lean toward as they get ready throughout the summer. We have a couple questions here I wanted to get in before we wrap up with a little bit of recruiting talk. First one is from WV Renovation. Has there been any chatter about Holden Stays this spring?
Plenty of it. We talked to Jared Parker earlier about the tight ends, and we talked to the tight ends earlier, and that's why maybe we haven't brought it up on the show as much lately, but he's got a lot of opportunities mm-hmm. because of, you know, there being not everybody here and operational. Flanagan comes in June, the recruit. You have Eli Reardon and Kevin Bauman with twin ACL tears, and they are going to be back this summer. So there's been a lot of reps for Holden Stays and Mitch Evans. And I think the thing that's really been impressive about Holden is he's put on weight and he's still really fast. You know, he was at 226 last year. He's up into the 240s now, moving well, really working on becoming an all-round tight end. His blocking has improved a lot. So, yeah, I mean, Notre Dame is still tight end you, even though maybe the best one ever to play there is on his way to the NFL. There's a lot of good talent behind him.
Yeah, the blocking part of it was probably the biggest thing that Holden Stays needed. I think it was revealing that Eli Reardon was sort of tapped as that extra tight end when they were both freshmen last year until he got hurt. So that Eli proved to be a little bit of a better blocker than Holden did. So we needed to sort of get a better handle on that. But he's an impressive looking kid. I think the ceiling is really high for him. I mean, the combination of him and Eli Reardon in that same class is pretty tantalizing if those guys can get things together. And obviously if Eli can manage to stay healthy. One more question from John Murray. Will Ryan Barnes end up as a corner or end up as a safety?
If I were Ryan Barnes, I would want to be a safety mm-hmm. simply because the path to playing time, especially after this season, is the lane is clear. Right. Now, is he good enough to be a safety? Is he better off being a corner? I think, again, the Lorenzo Styles piece, if Lorenzo Styles is permanently over there, and I think that's the way it's going to go, Barnes needs to go to safety. He has taken some safety reps, unlike Clarence Lewis. He has mm-hmm. done that. So if he can show some potential there, that's his best chance to get on the field. I can remember when Xavier Watts was kind of in the same position with wide receiver safety, and I thought, boy, he ought to take that safety opportunity and run with it. And now I think he's Notre Dame's best safety. And I think he's got a future beyond Notre Dame.
Yeah. I think that's true of Xavier Watts, a big season expected for him upcoming. I would lean towards safety for Ryan Barnes too. I don't know that there's a real convincing argument that he should stay at corner. Although he has made some plays, they've been asking him to do some nickelback. They like his length at the cornerback position, which certainly should lend itself to being able to help him out at safety as well. So that would be my guess that he ends up at safety, but Notre Dame's been at least a little resistant to sort of make the full move of that, especially when there's been opportunities. It's not like they would have a hard time to find him safety reps this spring. So that's been a little bit confusing that he hasn't sort of maybe dove into that more so far, but I think that's probably the best path for him moving forward.
Do we have one more question? Or are we going on to?
Oh yeah. WV Renovation actually just threw in another one. Was the Tyler Buchner open practice an anomaly, or have you heard that he has been that good all spring?
What we've heard is that he's been pretty good all spring and getting better. I think that what the coaches hoped was that Sam Hartman would be a very good thing for Tyler Buchner at the competition, and Sam would bring the best out in him, and it has. Those guys have become friends. They've helped each other get better. You know, and just what I've seen of Tyler, I think this is the best version of Tyler I've seen. Again, small sample size, but yes, I think Tyler Buchner has improved quite a bit, to the point I think if you ask most of the people on our beat, they would say Hartman will start in 23, and now Buchner is really the favorite to be the starter in 24, whereas before I think he was one of a bunch of different options.
Right, yeah, that seems to be in line with his trajectory right now. And is he patient enough for that? We will see. But I think he sees himself improving there. I think he probably appreciates the way this competition has been handled. I mean, he's been given opportunities this spring where I think it would have been very easy for him to sort of feel like the outcast, and that Sam Hartman was brought in here to replace him and that he wasn't going to have a chance to sort of prove himself this spring. And that doesn't seem to be the case. He's been given opportunities, and it seems like he's made the most of them. I will just add the caveat. Yes, he looked good and probably as good as we've seen him, but he wasn't lighting up the defense by any means. Right. The offense was still struggling overall. He was making some plays. I think his fundamentals are better.
I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he looked pretty good, but it wasn't like he was throwing bombs down the field all of a sudden he looked like Joe Montana out there. So I just want to keep some perspective on how well Tyler Buckner was playing.
Nor did he look like Nate Montana.
He did not look like Nate Montana either.
Okay. So let's roll into recruiting. The list is staggering. So we've got, there's 9 players in the 2024 class, right? My math is right on that.
Committed players, you mean? Yes.
Yeah. And a bunch of them will be at the game, including CJ Carr to help recruit Cam Williams. Yeah,
most of them will be here. Yep.
And then you've got 2024 targets and a lot of the top 2025 guys. So Tyler, what should people know about the recruiting weekend that won't take 25 minutes to say?
Yeah, I got some quick bullet points here. Yeah, just we're continuing to confirm names until I think as we speak we've hit like the 20 mark in terms of guys that have Notre Dame offers that aren't committed to what we consider targets in the 2024 2025 classes are expected to be at Notre Dame on Saturday, and that spans sort of all the different position groups. Like the one position group there's not a lot of big names at is quarterback, obviously, other than CJ Carr, who will be here, as the 2024 commit. The 2025 quarterbacks were in earlier this spring, but aren't expected to be coming in this weekend for the blue gold game. I think there's a real chance that Notre Dame should have, and the blue gold game itself and the recruiting weekend is important, but it's also sort of the culmination of this spring recruiting period. So I think like by the end of this weekend, Notre Dame should have a really clear picture of where it stands at safety with its top targets, at wide receiver with its top targets, with offensive tackle at its top targets. There's a lot of different position groups where Notre Dame's gotten a lot of those guys on campus throughout the spring and will continue to get them on the campus this weekend. And so to have a good understanding of like, okay, who do we value the most? Who do we like the most of these guys? Because I think some of that is still open for interpretation as they get to see these guys in person on campus and stuff like that. And then also, okay, which of these guys are favoring us the most, and sort of figure out, okay, where do we go from here? I think Notre Dame really could use some momentum following this weekend in terms of starting to pick up some of these commitments where Notre Dame is getting visits from guys that it feels like it's in good positions with, but hasn't really necessarily turned that into commitments this spring. So I think there's an opportunity for that to start happening following the blue gold game. Now I'm not predicting that's going to like happen on Saturday specifically, but I would imagine a number of these guys that are visiting could end up in Notre Dame's class, or even some of the guys that have been on campus somewhat recently. And some of these guys that have been on campus recently and are getting back for the blue gold game. So that's a really good sign. So, and then I think there's a chance that maybe Notre Dame's first 2025 commitment could be on campus. Maybe it's one of the legacy recruits, whether it's Jerome Bettis Jr. or James Flanagan. Bettis being a wide receiver and Flanagan being a tight end. So there's going to be a lot of talent from a lot of different classes on campus this weekend. There's been guys for weeks now, basically since after Notre Dame spring break and before and after that Easter break, where they really started to hit those weekend visits hard. Jason Robertson, a 2024 wide receiver that Notre Dame likes a lot. A former USC commit is wrapping up a multiple day visit today. 2025 tight end Nate Roberts is a guy that was potentially a strong candidate to be an early commitment for Notre Dame. Styles Prescott is one of those guys that I mentioned that was here last weekend, and he's getting back on campus again this weekend. He's a 2024 offensive tackle out of the Indianapolis area. So a lot of names to watch. We will be keeping in touch with them, keeping you updated with them. With updates on the Insider Lounge throughout the weekend, and into early next week because there's so many guys. So we can't, it's hard to talk to them all with only so little time. And also this weekend, Charleston and I will be heading down to Cincinnati for the Rivals Camp series that is taking place in Cincinnati, and hopefully get a chance to see a number of Notre Dame targets in action and interview them as well.
Live chat tomorrow at noon at InsideNDSports.com. Podcast on Friday, not sure the time yet, but look for that. And tons of stories, tons of videos between now and the Blue Gold game and afterwards.
Yeah, we have so much content. I think some of the stuff we're getting this week, we're saving to next week. There's so much stuff we have. So there'll be lots of coverage. You'll want to not just be subscribed to us on YouTube, but also subscribe to us on InsideNDSports.com. Give us a chance. The subscription really helps us out and proves that we are giving you the coverage that you're looking for. So we anticipate having lots of different stories, lots of news, lots of insight to things going on within the program and on the recruiting trail as well. So it may be the end of spring, but it's certainly not the end of a busy time for us. We'll continue to have plenty of things to discuss. I think we'll probably try to do this again next week, Eric. What do you think?
I'll vote yes.
All right.
With the NFL draft and the camp and wrapping up the Blue Gold game.
Yeah, we can put a bow on spring football. So I think there's still plenty of stuff to talk about. We don't know that we'll be able to stay weekly throughout the late spring and early summer, but we'll try to get to in front of you guys as often as we can and maybe sort of
like. Because we want to sleep at one point.
Football may never sleep, but we do sleep sometimes. Not in great quantities, though, unfortunately. but that's all we have for this week. We appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you're subscribed, like the video, turn on your notifications, and we will see you next time.